Hi, this is Kim Loftus. I'm so excited to have the opportunity to chat this afternoon with Catherine Speaks Large, who has written a really wonderful book, very compelling story of her father, Big Jim's transition process and her reactions to that, and more importantly, her ability and her learning to communicate with him after his death. It's called Waiting in the Other Room. It's a very poignant read. There's so many great anecdotes and stories in there about this relationship between this father and daughter, both prior to and after his transition. And this book, when I read it, as someone who, of course, as many people, has lost loved ones, has lost friends, it was just a beautiful validation to me of the fact that we never really die. We're always around. We might be around in a different form or having different experiences or be in a different space, but we're always still here. And I think that's just such a wonderful statement and a wonderful realization for people to be able to come to in their lives if they're grieving a loss, if they're experiencing the emotional pain that comes with the quote-unquote loss of a loved one, to realize that they're still around, they're still here, they still love us, they still want the very best for us, and they're still happy to often give us guidance, give us advice, as Big Jim does so often throughout the course of this book. And another thing that I think is so cool about Big Jim's advice in this book is that he talks a great deal about the afterlife, about what he experiences after his death, about where he is, about how he sees things now and sees the world now. And I know Kate is going to talk a little later as we progress here about that and about some of those experiences. So this is really an awesome way to receive new perspective and to see things perhaps in a different light. So I really enjoyed the book tremendously personally. I think, you know, there's a great deal of humor and there's some wonderful stories and just some really, really compelling, thought-provoking material here that I think so many people would benefit from and enjoy. So that's my little endorsement for the book. I had such a delightful time reading it, and I'm so thrilled to be able to sit down with Kate and have a conversation about the book and let you guys get to know her a little bit and experience more about what the book's all about, because I think you guys would really enjoy it if you give it a chance, and there's always something that you can learn from it and something that you can experience differently from having the opportunity to read this book. So without further ado, Kate, I'm so excited to have the opportunity to chat with you about this.
Hi, Kim. I'm excited to be here with you, too.
Yay! Well, that's fabulous. I'm really excited. And before we start talking about the book itself and the experiences that you had while writing it and, you know, during the creation process of the book, tell the listeners, those listening to this, a little bit about you and your spiritual work that you do in the world.
Okay. Well, for the past 10 years, my main work has consisted of creating and maintaining spiritually based websites for clients. And that, you know, that's how you and I met.
Absolutely.
On the background, I was, you know, spending time on my spiritual work when I could. I've often had new clients come to me and tell me that Spirit guided them to me, or that Spirit told them that I could help them. And let me tell you, when that happens, I always think, no pressure there. But it always works out beautifully. You know, Spirit takes over and guides the creative process, and everybody's happy. But, you know, I love creating and maintaining the websites for others, but my heart is in my personal spiritual work, and that's the Soul Kisses website. You know, 10 years ago when I created the Soul Kisses website, there were only a handful of spiritually based websites on the Internet, and they didn't offer very much information. And I wanted to offer a website that offered information and support for the spiritual journey of those who clicked in. You know, something that offered tools that people could use every day to help them dissipate the fear that is the undercurrent of all our lives. Mm. And, you know, over the years, that site has grown and grown. It's just huge now. And it offers the Daily Soul Kiss, which is a spiritual affirmation that you receive in your your email. And we have a newsletter that has subscribers to over 50 countries. We have e-courses and guided meditations, e-books, just a plethora of information that includes book and audio recommendations as well as websites to help people on their spiritual path. But the other thing that's included there is this book, The Waiting in the Other Room, that, you know, Daddy and I wrote, and its companion journal.
Absolutely. And it's such an awesome site. I highly recommend that people go to www.soulkisses.com. Check out the site. There's so much stuff there in addition to the book. There's just tons of stuff. There's tons of information. There's messages from Jesus and the angels. There's just all sorts of wonderful stuff that you can participate in and look at and enjoy there. And it's really Kate's baby and just is such a wonderful, it really provides such a wonderful experience of her essence. So I really encourage everyone to go check that out, and particularly the Waiting in the Other Room book that we're about to discuss. Because, yeah, it's a massive site, girl, and you've got so much wonderful stuff on there that folks can participate in and learn from.
Yeah, it's grown into quite the monster.
It really has. So let's talk a little bit about the book. The book is called Waiting in the Other Room, and I remember when you first told me about this title, I was like, wow, that's very compelling. Tell people a little bit about why Waiting in the Other Room as the title of the book.
Well, when we started writing the book, you know, it didn't have a title, and I had gotten quite a way into it, and I did have a chapter that was titled Waiting in the Other Room, and this chapter is about my great-grandmother, and I just dearly, dearly love my great-grandmother. Everybody did, and I lived near her, but I didn't see her very often. And when she died, I felt huge guilt that I didn't see her more. And so in honor of her, I used to go to the cemetery a lot. I'd leave her, I'd take her flowers, and if I didn't have flowers, I'd draw a picture of a flower and leave it on the, you know, snug up against the tombstone there. But the tombstone itself had her name and my great-grandfather's name and their date of, well, year of birth and death. But the inscription underneath it was Waiting in the Other Room. And the first time I read that, it gave me this wonderful sense of peace that, yes, that she was that close. I couldn't reach out and touch her or have lunch with her anymore. But she was that close. And so just sitting there with the tombstone saying, Waiting in the Other Room, always made me feel close to her. Mm. And so that's in the chapter in the book. But the way we actually named it, I was cooking breakfast one morning, and all of a sudden it just popped in my head that was the name, and I got so excited. And then actually when my dad article for the newsletter, he had a little something to say about that experience, and I'd like to read that to you if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, this is what Big Jim had to say about naming the book. The day she finally paid attention to us, he's talking about me, and got the name of the book was fun. We had been whispering it to her over and over. Then she was cooking breakfast, and her great-grandmother came in to help us. We all yelled together, and the light bulb came on right over her head. She heard us. Boy, was she excited. She was so thrilled about the name, said it was perfect, and of course, it is. Mm. So he's always involved in decisions and things that are going on with the book in the most amazing way. So he gets information to me. It always cracks me up. But it just, right, boom, that idea came right in my head and was like, of course. That's what we have to name it.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's after you read the book, if you're wondering, you know, prior to reading the book, Waiting in the Other Room, that's interesting. After you read the book, it'll make perfect sense. So, absolutely, it's a perfectly apt title for the book. And your dad is hysterical. He has so many amazing ways, as you said, to get things across to you and express his presence and his ideas, and it's just awesome. And for folks who haven't had the pleasure of getting to know him through both the Soul Kisses newsletter, which is another thing I highly recommend, because there's always a channeling from Big Jim, a message in there from him to share with everyone, and through Waiting in the Other Room, tell folks a little bit about who he is and what he's like, because he's awesome.
Well, thank you. You know, when Daddy was alive, he was depressed a lot. Mm. And he would say that he would be so damn far down in the depression that he didn't know if he'd even be able to climb out of it. Mm. And that was really hard. You know, depression hurts everybody.
Yeah.
And now he can see from the other side that he could have gotten help with that depression, mm-hmm. but the depression was clearly in control because he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But now that he's on the other side, every time I see him, he's got this huge smile on his face, like a Cheshire cat with this huge grin. Mm-hmm. He's laughing, and he makes me laugh. You know, he'll have the dog do something that makes me laugh. And he breaks up whatever dynamic is going on here. He'll come in and do something, and it just changes everything. And it's been really exciting to have this new presence in our lives. Mm-hmm. And my family has now come to accept that. It took a little bit, but everybody's there now. I mean, I was here working just the other day, and Jesse, my daughter's coming down the hallway to my office, and I hear her say, "Mom, Grandpa's here." And my brain just went, "What?" And I thought, "What in the world is she talking about?" I get up, and I walk out into the hallway, and there's this little tiny spider hanging from a web right in the middle of the hallway. And how did you even see that? She said, "Grandpa showed me." You know, he's always dropping little spiders at the most amazing times, and it always makes you laugh because they used to be really huge when I was growing up. I mean, those things were monsters, and I'd be screaming, hysterical, and he'd have to come kill them. And so now he'll drop in a little one, and it always makes me laugh. So he's got quite the sense of humor, the same sense of humor he had when he was alive. It's very dry, mm-hmm. But he's just made a whole new dynamic in my life since he's a musician.
Yeah. Yeah, he is a delightful guy, and there's so many stories in the book that illustrate that, that I know people really enjoy when they start reading the book and will find a lot of really, really fun interactions in there and ways that he chose to express himself and communicate with you. So,
yeah, we didn't want to write the book. It's not a hanging the crate, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Not, but some people will hang crates. My husband, Aunt Nancy, when she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, she said, "We're not going to hang crates." Mm. And we didn't. We laughed. She told me, I sat and listened to her for hours and hours about her life as a young girl, and we laughed. And that's the way Waiting in the Other Room is written. It's to give you comfort and to help you laugh and to become more of one with your loved one in that love source of laughter, mm-hmm. rather than the horrible sadness and grief and pain of death.
Mm, beautifully said, and it's very true. This is not a sad book. This is not a depressing book. There is so much hope and joy that radiates from this book, and it's such a refreshing way to have written it.
Mm-hmm. And so much fun. I mean, you know, you'd think that writing a book about death would just be morbid, mm. but it wasn't. I mean, this was a labor of love, and it was a lot of fun, and Daddy really pushed. He really pushed to get me on track to get the book written, and, you know, he used that sense of humor, and it's just been amazing the things that he's done to get my attention. One of the things that he did last year ago in October, you know, it's the anniversary of his death, and I knew he was going to be here helping me, and he was. And I had set aside a day, and I hadn't gotten started. You know how it is. You start doing this thing, the other thing, and next thing you know, it's 2 hours later.
Yep.
I went downstairs for lunch, and I turned the TV on to catch the weather, and the very first thing I heard from the other room on the TV was, "It is I." I know that, you know, for some people, you're thinking, "It is I? What does that mean? It means nothing." Well, to me, I knew that was a sign that my dad was here and waiting to get started, because when he was alive and he would call my mother and she would answer the phone, he would say, "It is I." And so I knew when I heard that, oh, okay, Daddy, I'm going to get to work. I promise. As soon as I eat lunch, let me eat lunch and we'll get started. And we did. And that was a very, very good afternoon.
It's so awesome. That is, it's just, it's so fun. The ease with which the communication began to come after a period of time, and just experiencing that in your journey throughout the course of the book, and the way that they coalesced and became seemingly more, you know, bigger and brighter as the experiences continued. It's just, it's pretty amazing to read that. So it's very personal, but at the same time, it's very universal, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. You just have to be open to the things that were part of them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So before we talk extensively about the communication process itself, just for a little background reference, tell people a little bit about your dad's transition process.
Well, when Daddy told me that he was going to have open heart surgery, it was the Friday before the surgery on Monday. I mean, there was no time to go out there. And he didn't want me to. You know, he says, I'm going to be fine. And I consulted with all my spiritual friends, and they all said he's going to be fine. And so I was like, okay. Well, he went and had his surgery on Halloween, October 31st. And I talked to my mom about lunchtime, and she said, yep, everything's going great. I'm going to go have some lunch. And a couple hours later, she called me and said, something's wrong. He's not responding. The surgery went well, but they're not. He won't wake up. And so I got off the phone with her. Of course, she was just beside herself. And I immediately called a friend of mine who has a very, very strong connection with the other side. She's a wonderful medium, Adele Insalata. And she asked me Daddy's name. And I told her his full name, and she said, I'm going to connect with him. And so she did, and she started telling me the things that were going on with his body, and she told me that there could be some paralysis. And I knew if there were going to be was going to be paralysis, he would not stay. Mm-hmm. And so she said, you got to get off the phone, and you got to connect with him. And I was like, okay. And I hung up the phone, and, you know, my little human brain went, oh, my God, what are you going to do? He's 1,000 miles away. How are you going to connect with him? You know, all these physical world questions. And I was like, I don't have time for this. I just got to do it. And I set the intention. Next thing I knew, I was like, I was right there with him in the operating room, and we were up over his body, and he was so happy to be out of his body. And he said, I'm fine, I'm fine. And I'm like, yeah, I think you're so fine, you know, because this doesn't look good. And he was a little annoyed with the doctors because they weren't seeing what was wrong with the heart. But the other side of that was he was happy to be out of that body. And so we talked a little bit, and I left. And then I talked with Adele again, and she was able to tell me that, you know, Archangel Michael and Archangel Raphael were with him because of the work that I had done with them, you know, through my spiritual work. And they told Daddy he could ride a Harley into the light of God, and so he was going to do it. So he and Archangel Michael and Archangel Raphael rode into the light of God on blazing Harley. And, you know, it was just, when you think of death is so painful.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful. Yet, in what I experienced with him, the joy and the love was there. And so my experience of his death is different than any experience of death I've ever had.
Mm.
You know, the pain and the sadness is there, but this love overshadowed all that to where I could connect with his energy because of that love.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a powerful experience, and the imagery of the riding off into the light on the Harley is just, it's awesome, and it's so indicative of who he was. And you share quite a bit about that in the book with people, so they can really get to know even more about who he is and learn more about how his life was and why that's so cool. And it's just so perfect as a way to transition out from this world into the next. And But you know, you had that experience. You experienced that and were there connecting with him during this process. And yet, when you began receiving communication from him afterwards, you had some periods of questioning going, is this real? Is this happening? Talk a little about that and how that was resolved for you.
Well, you know, Kim, that is so important because, you know, our human brains, we're conditioned that when people die, they're dead.
Right.
That's it. You know, our religions teach us one thing. You know, the physical world teaches us one thing. And, you know, we all have our own questions. And what happens is the human brain's telling us they're dead, but our heart is telling us that our loved one's still with us. And that's, you know, it's very confusing
mm-hmm.
because we've got this love that always lives, and yet we've got what we know to be reality of the physical world. And I hadn't, the thing with me was that I hadn't physically seen my dad for 12 years, but we had talked on the phone a lot. I mean, we, you know, we'd run a battery down on the phone talking. And then when he died, he was here. You know, he was coming in. I mean, the very first morning after he died, I was getting dressed, and I heard him say, "You've put on weight." And I'm like, what? I couldn't believe he would say that. But at the same time, of course he would, because that's who he was. And he was laughing. You know, he wasn't trying to say, "Oh, my God, you're fat." He was laughing at me going, "You put on weight," because he knew that I would go, "What are you talking about?" So he knew exactly what to say to me to get my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And no telling how many things he said to me before that I didn't hear. But then when, you know, then you're going, okay, he's dead. He's not really here. But then you're going, wait a minute, he just said something. I just heard him. So one of the things that really switched me over to, yes, he was definitely here, was when I was baking cinnamon rolls, and he leaned against the counter in my kitchen. And he was talking to me and yakking to me and saying things, and I was like, okay. I went out to the garage, and I came back, and he said, "You're really having a hard time focusing." And that's when I said, "Daddy, I want to see you across the room. I don't want to see you in my mind's eye. I want to see you across the room." And he just kind of ignored that and just kept talking to me, and he told me, he said something about my mom. And I said, "Yeah, she's making cookies for my sister-in-law, Brenda." And he starts laughing, and he said, "Yeah, Brenda made her mad." And, you know, I'm a girl, and I went, "What? Brenda mad?" But I didn't say, "Well, what happened?" And I should have, but I didn't. And then he just kept telling me things about my mom. And so when I talked to her later, I asked her, I said, "How did your cookie thing go with Brenda?" And she starts going off on how Brenda made her mad, and I started laughing. And she's like, "What's so funny?" And I told her, I said, "Daddy was here, and he told me Brenda made you mad." And so, you know, my physical brain then is really going, yep, he's here. He's here, and he's able to tell me things. And if I want to know stuff, I need to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really big turning point on our relationship, that he was definitely here.
Yep. Sometimes you just got to ask. You gotta get the validation. And I think a lot of people fear that. I think a lot of people fear needing to ask or wanting to ask. They feel like it's some sort of intrusion, or it's wrong, or it's bad, or, you know, it's not something they should do.
Right. Or that they won't get an answer.
Right.
You know, I think that has been one of my biggest fears in my life, is that if I ask, I won't get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got to ask and find to even get a clue as to what the answer is.
Exactly. You've got to approach it with an open mind. You've got to be curious. Keep that sense of curiosity when it comes to this. Don't be afraid of it, because as your book shows so beautifully, there's so much wonderful and so many wonderful experiences that are waiting to happen if you just ask and stay open to hearing and to experiencing.
Right. And you get that reconnection of that loved one that, you know, when they die, there's a void
yep.
that opens up in your life. And when you can continue the communication, that void gets filled with love.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have a choice, that's the way I want to live.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just being able to experience that. Now, a lot of us, when we experience grief, when we experience the loss of someone we love, and so many of us have been here, you talk in your book about a concept called distracted concentration. You want to talk a little about what that is and how it affects us?
Well, Kim, I'm so glad that you asked about that, because that's when they're talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, my distracted concentration times are like when I'm taking a shower, washing dishes, raking leaves, running the vacuum, walking the dogs, standing in line at the bank. You know, you're doing something, but your brain is not actively engaged.
Right.
And that's when they can get in there and say, yo, I'm here. And my dad comes and talks to me when I'm in the shower. It just never fails. I'm in the shower, and he starts telling me stuff to tell my mom. And I can't wait to get out of the shower because I forget. down or call right then and tell her. And this last time that he did that, when I called her as soon as I got out of the shower, and Daddy had four things he wanted to tell her. And each thing that I told her, she said, the first one, I was wondering what he thought about that. Second one was, I've been thinking about doing that. And I can't remember now what the other two things were, but each one was something that she either had an idea about or she was wondering what Daddy thought. Mm. And she didn't tell me. I had no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the distracted concentration is when our brain, we're doing something, but brains are not actively engaged in, you know, like we're not doing brain surgery and we're not, you know, writing out our grocery list. You know, we're, that concentration is there, but it's distracted just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the time to be open. And if you get something, you know, you may see a movie in your mind. You may hear them speaking to you. You may see words, or you just have to be open to, if you get that inspiration, that idea, follow through.
Yeah, yeah. Pay attention to it. Recognize it. Hold on to it. And definitely follow through, because there are so many wonderful experiences that could be waiting just around the corner if you choose to follow through. So absolutely, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid to act on it, because there's so many wonderful surprises that could await you if you do that.
Absolutely. And Daddy says that when we acknowledge them, it's like applause, and they just can't get enough of it. And when you acknowledge them, then they'll do more to let you know that they're there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I found that to be so true, and I love that. I love that, like applause. It's just, it's perfect, and I recognize that so much in my own experiences with loved ones who have transitioned. It's a very, very powerful statement, and I think people, if you keep that in mind, that statement in particular, when going through your grieving process and having that experience, that it's one of those really wonderful things that can carry you through and keep you focused on the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But, you know, at the same time that we want to stay focused on the good stuff, I think a lot of people, particularly people who do what you and I do and base our lives from a place of spirituality, a lot of times I think we get caught up in feeling like we need to think positive and we need to keep our glass half full. And the grieving process is not fun, and it's not positive, and it's not warm and fuzzy. And it's something that we need to allow ourselves to experience. And I think there are a lot of people who try to not so much gloss over it, but to move through it very quickly, or to not move through it at all, or to shut it out completely. And it's not a healthy way to live. Talk a little about that.
Right, Kim, you're so right. You know, we're human, and we must grieve. You know, if there was a handbook for humans, I believe right after the section about how babies grow up to be teenagers, there'd be a chapter about how we absolutely must grieve instead of suppressing our feelings. You know, when we suppress things in our body will become ill.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to allow that process of grief. You know, we all know that the grief we experience after the death of a loved one takes us to another world. It's a surreal type of reality where, you know, we function like we're on autopilot. And sometimes we even just feel like we're drowning.
Mm-hmm.
That it's important to allow that sadness and process of grief. But at the same time, like you said, you know, we have to celebrate that love as well.
Yes.
You know, the grief is a fear source, and it lowers our vibration. But when we celebrate and embrace to it that love we have for the loved one who's died, it raises our vibration, and that more closely matches theirs, and it opens the door to communicate with them when our vibration are more closely matched. And then they can help us get through that grief process. But it is so very important that we, you know, we let it happen. Because even, you know, with me and my dad, because he was here more than not right after he died, it was like he didn't die. Mm. And there'd be times that I'd remember that his body was dead, and I'd start that grief process all over again because it's like I heard it for the first time, and that was a little bit crazy. And so through the course of the book, I really learned that we have got to allow ourselves to grieve in whatever way that is. And nobody can say, okay, this is the way you grieve, because everybody's different. Our grief process is our own, and you know what, before we could finish the book, Daddy would come to me on a cloud. And I said, why are you on a cloud? And he said, because you have to understand, I'm dead. And I thought to myself, of course he knew I was thinking this, but I was thinking to myself, I know you're dead. But he was right. I really had to come to grips with that he's dead. And as I moved through that, he started showing me that when we do experience a death in our life, it really helps to open up that connection with the God part within us so that we can then connect and communicate with that loved one and with our angelic entourage to help us throughout our lives instead of just beating our head against the wall doing whatever we think we need to do. When we open to that God part within us, to our intuition and that guidance, then our lives can be easier if we let them. So the death of a loved one and the grieving process has a, you know, it's a huge part of our experience here on earth, you know, doing the loving someone and them dying and experiencing the grief and opening and illuminating that pathway to where we've all come from in the spirit realm. It's just huge to allow that process to happen, and a lot of us don't want to. You know, we just get so far, and we get to the anger part of it, and we're done.
Yep.
But when we can remain open and follow through and then really start focusing on that love we had together so that then you can feel them and, you know, raise your vibration to meet theirs and actually start to communicate with them and acknowledge that they're around, the whole world changes. Mm-hmm. The whole world is changing. Yeah.
Speaking of change, and the change that comes with dealing with this process, how do you think your dad has changed since his transition?
Well, that's I'm really glad you've asked that, too, because, you know, like I mentioned before, Daddy was depressed when he was alive. And, you know, I thought about that in that, you know, now he's so happy. He is so happy. And he can see all that, you know, the bigger picture of everything. And, you know, if a person is depressed, one might think, oh, well, if I die, I won't be depressed anymore. And that opens, you know, the doors to suicide and things like that. But that's not what it's about at all. You know, Daddy's life, being depressed here and being on the other side now, looking back, he can see that he should have asked for help because help was available. And so his story is one of ask for help. Don't spend your life depressed. You've gone, you know, we've all come here to Mother Earth on a mission and things to fulfill and do. And he looks back now and he can see that his field of possibilities has a lot of things left in it that he could have enjoyed had he chosen to do something about his depression. The message here is if a person is depressed and feels there are no choices, there are, and please look into it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point, and it's so important for people to keep that in mind when they're dealing with something like this. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we've talked a little about how your dad's changed during this process and after his transition process. What about you? How do you think you've changed through going through this and through writing the book? And kind of a follow up to that, how do you think it has changed and shaped your relationship with your dad?
Well, that it's really interesting that you ask that because I was raised Southern Baptist, and, you know, they scared the hell out of me. And I had so many questions. And my questions about death, they've all been resolved now.
Mm.
And even the ones I didn't even know I had, you know, I got so much information. And I get these glimpses of the love of the angelic realm, at least what my human brain can take in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely amazing. It's all-consuming, as if you're one with the air. You know, there's just really no way to truly describe how it's just moved me into this other place. And especially when I sit down and read it and, you know, being afraid of death, that's gone. That is just completely gone. And now, too, because, you know, someone so close to me has died, I have that compassion, that understanding of the reality of how life as we know it changes forever. And I know that, you know, anything, that there's really nothing anyone can say to help dissolve the grief or to help someone else, because each person's journey through the grief is their own, and they have to experience it in the way that they need to experience it. You know, no one can judge another person on how they deal with grief. All we can do is offer the tools to help them, and that's where Waiting in the Other Room comes in, to really help people to move through their fear of death and know, you know, that their loved one is really okay, and that if they, there are certain things that you can do to continue to communicate them with that. But, and, you know, as far as Daddy's concerned, you know, all I can say is that the relationship I have with him, it just keeps getting better.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, Kim, you're a daddy's girl, right?
Oh, yeah, I love my dad.
Yeah, you're a daddy's girl. And, you know, you have that warm fuzzy where your dad's concerned. And,
yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, he was my safe place.
Mm.
And, you know, we lived out in the country where, you know, it would be so dark at night. If you went outside, you had to really watch for the dog, because the dog doesn't move and you'll trip over him because you can't see him. When I moved out, I lived just a little bit distance from where my dad and my mom lived. And, you know, that was back in the day that if when people called you on a landline, if they didn't hang up and you picked up the phone, they were still connected to you.
Mm.
So I'm going to tell you a little story here. Back in when I was living out there, my phone rang in the middle of the night, and there was this guy that I didn't know who knew me by name who was wanting to talk to me. And it was starting to freak me out. I mean, he's waking me up in the middle of the night, and so I hung up. And he called back, and he, you know, he's saying, just talk to me for a little bit. You know, as a girl of 19 years old, I was totally free.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hang up on him. And the last time I hung up on him, I pick up the phone to call my dad, and this guy goes, are you there? And I was like, oh, my God. You know,
nice.
You're hanging a phone, you pick it up. This is out of a horror movie. And finally, he hung up, and I called my dad. He answered the phone, and I said, I was crying hysterically. I was totally out of control. And I was saying, come get me. And I hung up. And I didn't even tell Daddy where I was. But he came to my door, and he got me, and I was safe again.
Mm.
And, you know, when I grew up, you know, you move out of that safe place.
Right.
And you're just out on your own, and you're okay. And then when Daddy died, I thought that was over.
Mm.
You know, that warm fuzzy of being Daddy's little girl was gone and over. But it's not. Now that we've continued this relationship, it's just that warm fuzzy trust of being Daddy's little girl is back, and it's amazing, because you know that what that trust is like, and now even as a human, you know, you had that trust in everything, but now it's complete, because he can see everything that's going on around me in the bigger picture. And so when he gives me advice now, I definitely listen to it. You know, people may say, why would I want to talk to dead people? Well, because they get the bigger picture. And when they love you, they do everything they can to help you. And he's helped me in so many ways with advice that otherwise I would have been making huge mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been amazing that how our relationship has evolved and grown, you know, back from being that little girl and being Daddy's little girl and losing it, and now it's back again.
Mm.
And even more wonderful than I could ever have imagined.
Mm, that's beautiful, and it's such an awesome validation to people to understand that you don't have to be afraid of this process. You don't have to be scared of it. You don't have to be intimidated by it, because it's just another level of communication. It's just a different way to do it and to discover this new dimension, this new level of communication with someone you love, and deepen that relationship to a level, as you were saying, that you could you couldn't even imagine previously.
Exactly. And like right now, my grandmother on my mom's side is living, and I'm so close to her. And there was a time that, you know, when I even thought about my grandmother dying, I mean, I just lose it just thinking about it. And now, I mean, I've talked to her. She's 88 years old. She goes to Tai Chi twice a week, and she goes to bingo. But, you know, she's not going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, Grandma, if you go before me, I said, will you come back and write a book with me like Daddy did? And she always just laughs at me. She said, well, I know I might be busy. So we'll see. But to know that, you know, when she goes before me, that, you know, she's not going anywhere. She's still going to be here. And you know, for those whose family members are dying of cancer or other illnesses, and you're going through that process, and your human brain is telling you they're leaving and they're going to be gone. But don't let that rule you, because in your heart, especially through reading the book, it'll give you the validation that, no, they're not going anywhere. They're just changing form, that's all.
Yeah, so well said.